This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to The Bigger Picture. It is Meera Sivasodhi in the studio with me for his monthly show, Dr. John Ben Loy, a US licensed family and marriage therapist. We've got something interesting to talk about. Mm-hmm. Is altruism self-interest in disguise? How mm-hmm. are you, Dr. John Ben?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
And I know you were very happy to pick up this topic.
I was.
Why is that? I hardly thought this would fall under the, you know, purview of a US licensed marriage and family therapist. How so?
A couple of weeks ago, I was invited to join a group of people to Thailand. Mm-hmm. So there was about 30 of us from around the world, actually. One of the first stops that we made was in Lop Buri, mm-hmm. Which is, I think, about an hour and a half, 2 hours north. I fell asleep on a bus, so I can't remember.
Okay.
A couple of hours north of Bangkok. So once we arrived in the airport, off we went to Lop Buri. Now, Lop Buri, we stayed at a farmhouse, somebody's house, where they had set up a sort of a makeshift staying, you know, living arrangements for people. So it's pretty much outdoor sleeping, but with a roof over our head. And the idea to that trip was that is actually a social enterprise, that little project of having foreigners come and visit. Mm-hmm. So foreigners will come and visit and farm with these subsistence farmers. So we picked chili peppers, you know, chili padi.
Did you really?
I did. I picked chili padi. Okay. I picked chili padi.
Out in the scorching heat or getting your...
Well, I'll tell you more about it, but let me tell you the crops. So there was corn, and then they're also planting rice. Okay. So how did our host describe the work? First of all, you know, the chili padi, it's going to be really hot. If you rub your eyes, be careful. Uh-huh. There might not be water to wash your hands, et cetera, et cetera. And then the corn's going to be very high. You need to wear long sleeves, and then the leaves are going to slice your hands. And of course, if you're standing in, you know, planting the rice, then you'll be standing on... some human feces, possibly. Yeah, that's right. And so, which one would you like to pick? I only picked, you know, chili padi because, okay, it's about my arm's height, and so my back wouldn't get in problems. But as it turned out, it was a beautiful morning, very cool, and I had just come from a busy 2 months, just hardly any time to do anything relaxing. Picked the peppers, and really enjoyed myself. It was cool air. There's some mountains in the distance. And so by the end of that experience, the purpose of the exercise was so that we would understand poverty in Thailand and the systemic nature of poverty, how little these subsistence farmers earned, and why their children are therefore economically sort of forced into the slums, yeah, in Bangkok and Pattaya, and do the kind of work that we wouldn't want our children to do. Yeah, crime activities, sex workers, etc. Mm-hmm. So understanding the systemic connections of poverty, unfortunately, was something I didn't really get even after having picked the chili peppers. Mm-hmm. So, you know, very honestly with the group, I said, I have trouble empathizing why this is so much suffering. It's just not going into my head.
Right.
And even into the week after that, we had Semeras conference in a different part of Thailand. I still didn't get it. It only started hitting me about a week ago, after having left there for a week, and then we're all on Facebook, connecting, seeing the pictures again and again and again. Then it dawned on me that 13 adults picking chili peppers for 4 hours, basically we yielded 43 kg of chili padi. And essentially in ringgit, it's 1 kg... the farmers are paid 1 ringgit. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine?
That's 4 of you. 43 kilograms in total.
That's right.
So you're only yielding 43 ringgit amongst the 4 of you.
No, 13.
Okay.
Right? So in essence, per person, based on our yield, we were earning...
About 10 ringgit.
No. The per person per hour is about 80 cents.
Okay.
So that's how much people are earning. It didn't dawn on me that was a problem until about a week after I came back to KL.
Why did it take you so long?
I don't know. I think my brain just couldn't accept it. I just cannot imagine how painful it is. If I really could empathize with it, I would have to do something about it, wouldn't I?
Yeah. You didn't want to understand it.
You could say that. Mm. You could say that, you know, I'm a bit too selfish, maybe.
What I don't think about will not hurt me in any way.
Well, if I think about it, then I'm going to have to do something about it. Yeah. Otherwise, I can't live with myself.
Of course.
Yeah.
Do you think this whole act of altruism is something that we're born with, or is it something that we've evolved with because of the battle of survival back in the day?
I think altruism as a concept, I have trouble with it. I mean, altruism has to do with concern and care for another person, and even to the extent of not having any consideration for your own well-being, right? So it depends. Different people define it in different ways. But the concept of altruism itself, I think, is problematic, especially from my perspective, because I see things as interrelated. So even if I help you, I see that I will be helping myself in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, which is what we're discussing.
Yes.
Is altruism self-interest in disguise?
I think the question is problematic, if I may say so. I would say more like, how can we have more good exchanged between people?
Such as?
So, you know, whatever, in my relationship with you, how can I benefit you in such a way that I can benefit me, mm-hmm. or you could benefit me? I think thinking a sort of more win-win way is better than asking, is altruism self-interest in disguise? Because that begs the question that if you have any self-interest in doing good, then it's wrong. I want to challenge that.
And were we built to be selfish creatures?
I would say yes, but how do we define selfish?
Selfish.
Yes.
Mm.
We have to be interested in ourselves. I mean, every time you board a plane, you learn that. Put the mask on your head, over your face first before you attend to another person.
But there's a good reason for that.
Yes. What is it?
That, you know, you... that's the only way you're going to help somebody else.
Well, underlying that is I have to be good to me in order to be good to you. How long will it last? If I cannot be healthy for me, how much can I be healthy to you in the long run?
Right.
Yeah.
So that is a balance. And it works best that way, is what you're saying. So
yes.
There's no need to sort of kill yourself or deprive yourself in the name of altruism.
Yeah.
Which some people have done.
Well, yeah. And some people give of themselves because it's a way to inflict pain upon themselves,
yes.
Unfortunately. I call that dysfunction.
Is that something else altogether?
Yeah. I think someone who is not living a life that is that helps them thrive in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean being super wealthy or, you know, super healthy. I'm just talking about you feel good about you in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
Not you feel good because someone else, you're better than someone else. But you're happy with yourself and you're growing in yourself. That's good. That's good. Out of abundance, we're able to help others. I think that's really important.
Mm-hmm. So when you realized, it started to dawn on you as to what was really going on with this whole systemic connections of poverty,
mm-hmm.
what did you realize?
I'm asking questions now. And I'm asking questions with people. I spent an evening talking to a good friend of mine who has helped, has been doing sort of social work kinds of things for a good couple of decades now, maybe, yeah, a little less than that. And he comes from a fairly well-to-do family, mm-hmm. as well. So I'm asking the question of, can families of wealth learn what it means to be like families in poverty? And I don't mean become poor. I mean, can you empathize? Can you learn? Because if I am a therapist and I'm in the job of helping people, and I have so much trouble really empathizing with them, then what about those who are not in the helping profession or not, you know, trained in that way? How do I help families of wealth learn the suffering of the poor? Yeah, that's the question I'm beginning to ask myself. And also approached a scholar in the U.S. who's actually married to a Malaysian, asked him whether he would partner with me to start up a research project on this question of poverty,
mm-hmm.
particularly linking individuals or families that are that are wealthy with those who are in the margins. Mm-hmm.
Then how would you define things like, you know, zakat and fitra, you know, where the Muslims give back to, mm-hmm. you know, they give their money to a certain amount of money mm-hmm. to the Makkah Tabung Haji, and then after that, mm-hmm. that money is sort of dispersed to the poor. That's in a way of giving back.
Yes,
right?
That's institutionalized giving back. Mm-hmm. I mean, that happens in Christian circles as well, in church. I'm not sure how it happens in Buddhist circles, etc. I see that as institutionalized giving. I think it's good to have. But we're talking about, or at least I'm talking about, a felt desire, yeah, to empathize with those who are really suffering. So my giving, my 10% or whatever it is, it's giving, mm-hmm. But it's doing rather than really
feeling
empathizing.
It. Mm. You're not feeling it. It's easy to part with money.
That's right. It can be.
Yeah.
If you have a lot.
Of course.
Yeah.
But feeling it is actually going down and working with them and you know, experiencing what they go through.
That's right.
Mm.
Yeah.
Which also brings me to the fasting month, mm-hmm. Which is something that Muslims do to reflect upon the poor and what happens during Lent, mm-hmm. That sort of thing. Does that help in a way?
I think what we can do is institutionalized behaviors, yeah, that will get us to remind ourselves of what's important. Mm-hmm. What tends to happen in organized religion is that the meaning and the good that's behind the institutionalization of the good gets lost, and individuals lose that. When they lose that, then it becomes just function. Mm-hmm. And then there could be hypocrisy around function as well. Oh, look at me fasting, you know, that sort of thing. And then people lose faith, you know, in these sort of good works. So I think it's good, but we really need to teach the heart of the matter so that good can be learned in more effective ways and more life-changing ways.
What do you think? Give us a call. Our phone lines are open. I really want to hear from you. Is altruism self-interest in disguise? Dr. John Benlaw in the studio with me. I'm ready to answer some of your questions or share your experience with us as to how you feel when you give back to society. That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. It is The Bigger Picture and it's Meera Sivasuthi. Dr. John Benlaw, licensed, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist with me. We're discussing altruism. There was an article recently in the BBC mm-hmm. which, you know, spoke about altruism, whether or not it's self-interest in disguise. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty interesting article in that it discussed certain people in the industry who, in the field of sociology, am I correct, or psychology?
Math, yeah, I think.
And they... You know, there's this constant debate going on about it. Mm-hmm. Were you exposed to much of that debate, Dr. John Ben?
Just a little bit. When we studied sort of social exchange theory, in family studies, we did look at the exchange of resources as a way of seeing interaction. And so, people then start getting very numerical, very formulaic, you know, how much this, how much that.
I saw those equations, and I'm thinking, how do these equations come about?
Yeah, I think they come about by people who see the world in that way, if you don't mind me saying so. I have mathematician friends, so I can say so. I think math is fascinating and can be very beautiful. I'm not very good at it. Mm-hmm. But if that is how you want to see human behavior, just in terms of formulas and factors that you can sort of measure, then you actually lose out quite a bit. I think it's really important when we start to turn behavior into a formula that we not say this is all that there is. So, for instance, you know, altruism is boiled down to how much you get back, etc., things like that. There is so much more within the human mind that it's not an economic game theory.
Mm-hmm. Not at all.
Not the way I see it.
Not okay. Yeah. Hi, LTY. How are you?
Hello, Meera. Happy Diwali. Even though it's over, I still wish you because I don't have a chance to.
Yes,
you
I have. Yeah. I haven't been around, so I don't blame you.
How was your Diwali?
Very good. Thank you.
Good. Nice to hear that. And good afternoon, John Benloy.
Good afternoon.
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
You sound very optimistic today.
I am? Okay, I'd like to hear why you think so.
We always need a brain doctor, not the anatomy brain doctor, but the other psychological doctor.
Yes, I see. What do you think, LTY?
It's interesting to join in. Now, you talk about altruism. The definition of altruism is to live for the sake of others. I don't think this quality is very rare, you know, it's very rare.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm trying to say is about the quality which I'm trying to evoke is loving kindness. Loving kindness, it's not kindness, it's more than that, loving kindness. I give you an analogy. Supposing you are in a coffee shop, at a coffee shop, you are ordering a lunch, say a chicken rice. Mm-hmm. It's so you just have enough money for chicken rice and a cup of tea and maybe some dessert. It happened that a beggar walked in. Before he opened the mouth, you should be aware that he's asking for the thing. But the point is this, you don't have enough money to buy him a lunch. Now, the application of loving kindness is something similar to this. You offer the plate of rice to him, even though you don't have enough money to order another plate. But never mind, you got enough money to buy some biscuit. That I call loving kindness, all right?
Okay.
Which is also a very rare quality. Now, before we come to loving kindness again, I want to emphasize on this word, Atma or Atman. I'm sure you're familiar, Mira, because you are Hindu.
Yes.
You're familiar. Atma and Atman is how you know your inner core, of yourself. This is very important. Before you can appreciate the relationship with others, you must really understand yourself. That is called the inner the Atman. I'm sure, Mira, you're familiar.
I hope so. Well.
You hope so. I think Ben Loy understand this one.
Okay.
Because before you understand people, you must understand what is yourself, your
right.
inner self.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
thank you, LTY. He made a lot of sense, actually.
He did. Are you surprised?
No, not at all, actually. I apologize. That came out all wrong.
That's I think, a really important point about self-understanding.
Yes.
And the ability to relate with others well. Now, he used a word that I might qualify. He said, understand yourself before you understand others, or you reach out to others. I would say, actually, it's both at the same time, before and after and during. That we really understand ourselves better in interaction with others. We cannot really fully know ourselves. So the idea sort of like I have to go into a cave and meditate and then I'll get enlightened and then come out and do good is a little bit maybe not so accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But rather it's in the doing that I also discover who I am.
That's right.
Yeah.
Our phone lines are open, 0377-109-1000. Altruism, is it self-interest in disguise, or would you even sacrifice your own life to save another? You know, sometimes it's hard to gauge. I mean, we, in a group setting, Dr. John Ben, sometimes we work together, we live mm-hmm. together, and we always perceive that one person to be selfish and mm-hmm. not like us.
Mm-hmm.
How do we understand these people? Can I blame myself if I have decided to look after myself first? Is it a wrong thing?
I think it's okay if you want to look after yourself. It's when looking after yourself becomes a problem for the other person, then you have to ask yourself the question, if 10 people were to evaluate your relationship, would the rest of the other 10 people say, yeah, you've got a problem? Then you kind of know, okay, my actions are maybe needs to be revisited. Yeah. If the other 10 people say, no, you're fine. You know, as far as we're concerned, you're just taking care of yourself. The other person is demanding too much.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can say, well, then can I have a meaningful relationship with this other person if I take care of myself? So in a commune, for instance, and I'm used to, let's say, you know, eating so much amounts of food, and then the rest of my group, as it were, if we were, I don't know, went to some group meditation thing for a month, complained because they're used to eating much less, then we've got a problem. Maybe I don't want to be in that commune. I want to be with the Shangri-La commune. And I don't mean the place. I mean the hotel. It's for me, it really depends on who you're with. Yeah, poverty, helping, selfishness is relative. Does that make sense?
Yes, of course. It is relative. So it really depends on, you know, who you're with.
Mm-hmm.
Are we morally inferior to those who are willing if we are less inclined to these kind of kindness?
Yeah. Well, according to whose morals.
Mm. Comes back to that as well, isn't it?
Yeah. I am quite, not to say relativistic, but I'm very mindful of the subjectivities of a lot of things.
Are we just attracted to the thought of knowing that, you know, certain people actually need us more than anything else?
Some people do. Mm. Some people really thrive on the idea that somebody else needs me. In my work in therapy, I have encountered people who sort of live off other people's needs.
Such as?
Well, sometimes people call them, they have a term. I don't like to use the term, but I'll just say it. Codependency.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of the codependent to the alcoholic, let's say. So the codependent needs the alcoholic to stay alcoholic. And so does things in such a way that the alcoholic will continue to need the help of the codependent.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a husband who's alcoholic, and, you know, the wife may say, you know, I need you to get off alcohol or something, but then at the same time brings home an extra beer.
Right.
You know, things like that, that there's something unconscious going on that they need to live in such a way that they continue to be needed. That happens quite a lot.
How does that relate to altruism?
Well, is that altruism? I don't know. That's why I have trouble with the word altruism. I think it's a sort of the way that it's done, you know, talking about formulas and all of that is a little bit ivory tower-ish.
Mm-hmm.
Not really looking and working with relationships. Because if you understand mental well-being, mental health well-being, there are a lot of things that could look like giving but is not giving. Yeah.
Mm.
And even someone who is so altruistic that they give their lives, I'm wondering what else is going on. This is not to say that giving your life to someone else is always problematic. No. In some cases, it is. Wow, this person is really something. You know, a hero.
Mm-hmm.
We have heroes in this world.
Yeah.
And heroines, right? But sometimes it's schizophrenia.
Mm.
Or something else.
Yeah. As it was in the case, one of the cases that I was actually reading. It George Price?
Mm-hmm.
No, it was someone else who actually, it was an act of kindness to others, even at the cost to himself. And in the end, he gave up everything.
Mm-hmm.
He had no money in the end. And ended up killing himself.
Right, that was in the BBC
That's
article.
That's right, in
That's
the
right.
article.
That's right. And I mean, I have all kinds of questions about that when I hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah, what else was going on for him?
Correct.
Yeah.
Psychologically, what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
What about adopting a dog?
Mm-hmm.
Would you consider that altruism?
It can be. Again, how do you want to define altruism, right? If you adopted a dog because you felt bad for the dog, and the dog is really inconvenient, there's really no perceivable benefit to you,
mm-hmm.
and you're just doing just to help a dog, okay, maybe that's a selfless altruistic gesture. But
okay.
I would want to know what is in there for you?
What is the motivation?
In a good way.
Mm.
Nothing wrong with that.
For it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
We have someone else on the line. Okay. Unable to take the call, unfortunately. Call us back. Is it Anne? Someone is there, but we can't quite hear him. That's okay. Just moving on, we have another question here,
mm-hmm.
As in George Price of University College of London,
yes.
based on the BBC article.
Yes.
He explained how altruism could thrive even amongst groups of selfish people.
Mm-hmm.
How
okay.
is that? How would you explain that?
I don't know. How did George Price define altruism?
Comes back to the definition once again, but...
Yeah, if he's saying that... you know, good deeds could be done even among selfish people, then sure, why not?
Mm-hmm.
In my selfishness, I don't know, I gather a lot of food and those around me were able to pick off from my droppings. I don't know.
What did you make of the article?
Honestly?
Yes, honestly.
Not much.
Really?
Yeah, sorry.
Why is that?
Well, once I saw the formula, I did wonder, how are these people thinking? Do they have active lives of, you know, doing good? Do they work with relationships? Or are you sort of, you know, busy crunching formulas in your head?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
that was your doubt.
Well, that's, you know, I did social exchange theory in my doctoral studies, and it wasn't one of my favorite topics.
No wonder.
It's a bit too reductionist.
Really?
That's the problem.
Okay.
It reduces things down to a number, and I think that misses out too much.
Right.
We need numbers.
We do.
You know, I do quantitative research as well. So, mm-hmm. But
not in this case.
Well, in this case too, but how do we talk about it?
Mm.
We have to talk about it as a formula, but not expand it into all of humanity or talking about acts of kindness without looking at relationships, etc. It's a little bit too disconnected.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Charity Aid Foundation published the World Giving Index annually, and Australia actually came up the first place last year.
In terms of amount or percentage?
I'm not sure, actually.
Mm-hmm. They are the richest country now.
They are, which mm-hmm. tracks certain types of giving behavior in about 146 countries across the globe.
Okay.
That's what, and Australia
mm-hmm.
came up first. We're a third of the population. Volunteers
okay.
each month,
okay.
and two-thirds claim to have helped a stranger and donated money to charity.
Okay.
Okay, that's
mm-hmm.
how they came up
okay.
first.
Okay.
And someone from the charity of the Australian branch says that the rise was due to the flooding that hit Queensland
uh-huh.
and Victoria the
uh-huh.
year before, pointing out that figures tend to rise in times of national hardship.
Yes.
Do you think that is also a contributing factor towards altruism?
That makes absolute, yeah. I mean, if that's the way you want to measure altruism, then certainly. I mean, you know, I heard that, you know, different airlines are now contributing planes to Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tons of people, you know, pouring in aid. Yeah, that's when you're going to see it, when there's obvious natural disasters and needs.
Okay.
Yes.
And, well, do we have to question our motivation in giving towards these disaster victims?
I would say no. Why? Why do you want to question it?
Mm-hmm.
If it gives you something, that's good, but you're still giving.
All right. Yeah. Someone else is benefiting.
But if you're feeling guilty about it, then okay, let's talk.
Hi, who's on the line?
Hi, my name is Andrew.
Andrew, hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm fine.
Your question, or you want to contribute to the conversation?
Just wanted to do a little bit of a contribution.
Yes.
I'm a person living with HIV
okay.
for about 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in the early 1990s, when I was first diagnosed, it was difficult because there was no internet connections, there was no information that was available, and counselors were really, and doctors were not really that experienced with it. I was very fortunate because after about 8 years, my doctor was the one who actually asked me to join a support organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I started learning from there. And I realized one thing is that if I did not or was not able to help myself, I would not have taken the next step, which was actually start to do counseling for newly diagnosed patients.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think it's a two-way street, because first you have to be able to make sure that you yourself are stable
mm-hmm.
and are capable of carrying somebody else's burden for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is also, it is selfish in a way. I suppose you could call it selfish in a way, because I find that I'm learning a lot more as I am counseling people now. So it mm-hmm. improves my own knowledge and own skills, especially when my new clients ask me questions that I don't understand, and I actually have to find out the answers for them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. But why are you so hard on yourself? Why do you even think it's a selfish act?
No, I just find that if I look at the whole thing as being very giving, and I don't think that it fits my picture of myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is a two-way street, because these people who I've counseled, many have become my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty about support systems, support groups. It's when someone actually has journeyed, walked that path and knows the pitfalls, and you're able to help someone else along that journey and make it a little bit more bearable for them.
Mm-hmm.
And get them more to stand on their feet again. That's, I think, a really good thing for your own self-confidence.
Right.
And that's why I think it's selfish, because it builds my own self-confidence,
mm-hmm.
and it rebuilds my own self-image.
Right. Just hold on, Andrew. What do you think, Dr. John Benn?
How is he still on the air?
Andrew's,
yeah, Andrew, how do you define selfish?
I find that I may be only giving of myself my time,
mm-hmm.
but what I'm getting back is so much of knowledge, so much of information, because I actually have to ask doctors when they ask me questions, mm-hmm. that I don't know, because I'm not a mm-hmm. medical professional.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it improves my own mind, mm-hmm. by leaps and bounds, mm-hmm. because I have so many questions from so many people, and mm-hmm. they go through things that I haven't gone through.
Yeah.
So I actually have this opportunity to look at life through their eyes.
Yeah, yeah. I also benefit a lot from my clients. When I help them, when I learn, when I research, even coming on BFM, I learn a lot and I get a lot. But I don't feel bad about it. Are you feeling bad about it?
No, I'm not feeling bad about it.
But oh, that's good.
No, I think what Dr. John Benn has established at the beginning sort of got a lot of people thinking about their intentions or, you know, their motivation.
Okay.
Isn't it? Am I correct, Andrew? Because I'm questioning my motivations now. You're not a good person to have on the show, Dr. John Benn.
I'm sorry.
That's okay, Andrew. Carry on.
No, I just find that after surviving for 20 years with HIV and doing very well on treatment, I am able to give other people who are getting diagnosed this week, today, next week, a little bit of hope.
Yeah.
That it is not a death sentence, that there are medicines to manage the disease. And to be able to firstly accept, understand,
mm-hmm.
and live their life to the fullest. I think that's very important, because so many people just give up.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in, Andrew. I mean, I'd love to be in touch with you. Could you call us back so our producer can actually get your details down?
Okay.
Thank you very much. Thanks for sharing that with us. Okay, so there you go. Almost time at the end of our show now.
Already?
Yeah.
I was just starting to have fun. I really, you know, I got goosebumps listening to Andrew talk. I did.
Well, if you want to... We'll come back after the news update very quickly and conclude.
Sure.
We'll have Amirul up with a quick market update up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon and welcome back. Dr. John Benn Loy, licensed marriage and family therapist from the US with me. We're discussing altruism, self-interest in disguise. What do you think? I think we've had lengthy discussions on that.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew, what did you think of Andrew's input into the discussion?
Well, like I was saying earlier, I was getting goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's such a joy for me to hear people who've gone through suffering come around and then be able to give, you know, out of their suffering. And then on top of that, to hear him say that, to see that his giving is actually such a benefit even back to him,
mm-hmm.
and not taking a sort of, here I am so good giving.
That's right.
It's very motivating.
Do you think you can actually cultivate an altruistic society?
Wow. I hope so. I think I'm going to try, mm-hmm. actually.
How?
Yeah.
Where should we even start?
Well,
as children,
the question. Well, yeah, children certainly, but in terms of concepts, I would begin with empathy, the ability to empathize with what another person is feeling. The more empathy the society has, the more it's able to understand and therefore, you know, to care.
Okay. Yeah. And, well, Lute is asking, and I think he has a pretty good question. He's saying, isn't altruism a pursuit of a goal in one's mind and does not involve others? I mean, is he talking about the Kantian point, which is a theory, I
understand? Yeah, Immanuel Kant, I think, was a philosopher. I think that's who he's referring to.
Okay,
yeah.
And according to Kantian point, doing good must be without an expectation. Mm-hmm. Doing good, therefore, would be selfless without societal mores instilled.
Yeah. I really would like Kant to call in right now, and I would like to speak to Kant. Unfortunately, he's long gone. But why does doing good, why is doing good only good when it is without any self-interest? Mm-hmm. I have a problem with that. I think, I don't know. I'm going to say he's not here to defend himself, so it's not fair. Kant, are you doing good actively? I don't know. I don't know the history of or are you sitting on a, you know, in an ivory tower, you know, thinking through these thoughts of morals as a Western European man in your age? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sort of thinking in disconnected ways from actual society. Again, I could stand corrected. He could have been, you know, very active, yeah. And also when he wrote what he wrote, which my friends who are philosophers tell me was very, very difficult to read. I've read a little bit what I can. It is really for a period and a time, and that period and time didn't have the kind of psychological understanding or finesse that we have today. We have so much more nuance of understanding of how brain works, you know, what therapy is about. So Kant would have to come back and then, you know, blow me out of the water, and which I'm sure he could. I think one can do good with some self-interest, and I think that's natural.
Right. There's nothing wrong. You don't have to feel guilty about that. Is there true kindness in the world, do you
think? I think so. Yeah. I think so. But that's also true evil. And we need to continue to labor our labors of love. Especially now with what's going on in the Philippines. You know, every day I'm thinking, what can I do? What can I do? Yeah, every little bit counts.
It does. Yeah. Your message on altruism?
Find any little bit you can to be kind to yourself so that you can also be kind to others.
Thank you for joining me today.
Thank you.
Dr. John Ben Loy, U.S. licensed marriage and family therapist on altruism. And after this, it's My Life on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.